As far back as I could remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
I know I'd go from rags to riches if you would only say you care. And though my pocket may be empty, I'd be a millionaire. My clothes may still be torn and tattered.
To me, being a gangster was better than being president of the United States.
Wow, it's hot here in the Love Shack. You're listening to WGXC Acre, Hudson, Catskill.
This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. Today we will hear some songs from Amy Rigby, Catskill artist performing tonight at the Colony Cafe in Woodstock with Reckless Eric and with Jen Dubois from Catskill Opening. And also Art Omai in Ghent recently hired Gavin Berger to join Ruth Adams as co-executive director at the center. We'll talk with Gavin Berger later in this hour on the WGXC Morning Show. And we'll also hear the local better weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate and national headlines from the Public News Service. And it all starts after the local news, which is next. Stay tuned.
Waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood. Stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
Electromix is a series to document the history of experimental electronic music from the 50s to the 80s. Pioneers who paved the way for what was to become techno, ambient, electronica, and most of what we are listening to. Essential Culture on air every Tuesday from 11 to 12 a.m.
WGXC underwriting is provided in part by Kravitz and Son Roofing, a local family-owned and operated full-service roofing company for more than 48 years. Specializing in residential and commercial roof construction, repair, maintenance, and replacement using high-quality and affordable roofing products. Information at 518-567-4026 or online at KravitzandSonRoofing.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Ruby's Hotel and Restaurant in Freehold, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Andrea Macko is reporting for Porcupine Soup that the Durham Town Board has scheduled two public hearings on the Bosque subdivision to be located off Cornwallville Road and Strong Road that could bring high-end housing to the hamlet of Cornwallville. After nearly a year of meetings and thousands of pages of documents, the town board will conduct hearings to review the proposal and hear public comment at 6:30 p.m. Monday, November 22nd, and 6 p.m. Saturday, December 11th. The hearings will take place at the former Durham Elementary School. Bosque Development of Hudson submitted its proposal to the town of Durham in November 2020 to subdivide 95 acres and the construction of 12 high-end homes and farming operations. Since it was first presented, public comment at meetings and in correspondence has been largely in opposition of the development. Dozens of no subdivision lawn signs can be seen throughout town. Residents have expressed concerns about the development's potential environmental impact, its traffic impact, and the effect the development will have on the historic character of the hamlet. The town board determined last month that the subdivision will not have significant adverse environmental impacts and issued a negative declaration following the state environmental quality review. Durham does not have a planning board, so the town board serves in that capacity. Read more about this story at porcupinesoup.com.
Ted Remsnyder reports for Columbia Green Media that the lack of affordable housing is looming over the entire Hudson Valley, and now the Green County Legislature is considering spending $350,000 to the village of Tannersville to help employees of the region's ski resorts find a place to live. The $350,000 funding to assist with planning, development, and acquisition costs for a workforce housing project would come from the federal government as part of the American Rescue Plan Act. The money would go to a Hunter Foundation proposed development of 80 units of 1 to 3 bedroom housing in Tannersville. Republican legislators Patty Handel from Durham and Matthew Lavera from Catskill delayed approval of the funding November 8th, asking for more information for a special meeting on November 15th. The entire region has an affordable housing crisis, with fewer buildings available to rent or buy, more units taken off the market as short-term rentals, few hotel rooms incentivizing more short-term rentals, and an influx of new residents. Under capitalism, the lack of supply and increased demand causes prices to increase. Green County Legislature Chair Pat Linger said, and I quote, "The Airbnbs have been progressively increasing up there, which is taking away the housing stock that's available. But certainly since the pandemic started, it's at a crisis level," end quote. Hunter legislator Larry Gardner agreed. Gardner said, and I quote, "The situation is dire now. We have a terrible lack of supply of housing. This is not the norm. It's a huge aberration. This isn't some market force where housing is a little bit too high and too expensive on the mountaintop. This housing that we need for the business community and the community as whole doesn't exist," end quote. Catskill Republican legislator Michael Bulich did not think the legislature should move to solve the problem. He said, and I quote, "Our state income taxes are going to fund this, and you've got federal taxes that are going to fund some of this. Where does it end?" End quote. He added, and I quote, "The labor situation will not go away just because we have some housing," end quote. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Sam Raldins is reporting for Columbia Green Media that Verizon Wireless and the city of Hudson have agreed to settle a lawsuit filed in July by the communications giant. Verizon sued the city, its planning board, and code enforcement department over an application submitted by the company for a special use permit required to install 6 antennas on top of Providence Hall. The company alleged the planning board took too long to consider the application, attached unlawful conditions to its approval, and charged unreasonable escrow fees. in the case, Verizon asked the planning board to nullify the resolution, immediately grant necessary approvals for the application, and for the city to return $48,500 the company paid in fees in addition to the costs associated with the lawsuit. Verizon and the city have agreed to delete a condition that would have barred other wireless providers from locating at 119 Columbia Street for 20 years. It also amends another condition that a modification in the technology employed at the property changing the service from 4G to 5G does not require approval by the planning board, as long as any new or modified antenna continue to be screened by the approved stealth concealment panels. Also under the agreement, the city does not have to return escrow fees to Verizon. Settlement requires that the planning board approve the final plan for the concealment of the equipment, including materials and dimensions, within 30 days of submission by Verizon. Read more about the story at HudsonValley360.com.
Andrea Mako reports at Porcupine Soup that six neighbors are suing the Blackthorn Resort, the town of Durham, and the New York State Department of Health in an Article 78 lawsuit alleging that the Greene County Resort was illegally allowed to add to its RV park. The lawsuit states, and I quote, "The RV park on the property has been developed by Blackthorn without proper permitting from the town, DOH, and the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation," end quote. Blackthorn constructed two bathhouses and a dump station for the estimated 400-site RV park. The lawsuit alleges the town of Durham failed to publish supporting documents about Blackthorn's application for the bathhouses and gave it approval with minimal environmental scrutiny. The lawsuit states, and I quote, "Petitioners claim stem, in part, from a scheme between the town and Blackthorn to bypass the New York State's Environmental Quality Review Act and New York's open meetings law," end quote. County legislator Pat Handel is co-owner of the resort, but said she would not comment until the lawsuit is over. A court hearing is scheduled for December 3rd in Greene County with the Honorable Adam Silverman, a judge from the New York State Court of Claims. And you can read more about this story at Porcupine Soup.
Mid-Hudson News is reporting that the Dutchess County Legislature has approved the spending of $1.8 million in American Rescue Plan Act, or ARPA, funds for a one-time bonus to county employees considered essential during the COVID pandemic. Each county worker that qualifies will receive a $1,000 payment in recognition of their work during the pandemic shutdown. At a legislative committee meeting November 4th, Democrat Barrington Atkins, who represents Poughkeepsie, tried to amend the proposal to make it a one-time payment of $2,000 for each of the workers. The amendment failed, and Atkins took to social media to criticize his Republican colleagues. According to County Executive Mark Molinaro, if Atkins' amendment had passed, the payments would have been delayed in order to renegotiate with the unions representing the workers. The impacted workers are members of the CSEA, DCDSPBA, the DCSEA, and the DCSA. Legislature Chair Greg Pulver praised the plan, quote, "Our county employees went above and beyond throughout the pandemic. I am so proud of each and every one of them. This is a token of our gratitude, and I am thrilled we are in the financial position to be able to offer them this distribution," unquote. The payments are expected to be issued to 1,609 county workers before the end of the year. Read more about this story at MidHudsonNews.com.
Brendan J. Lyons is reporting in the Times Union that on November 10th, the Office of State Attorney General Letitia James publicly released the transcripts of interviews with the women who have accused former Governor Andrew Cuomo of sexual misconduct and other witnesses in the four-month investigation of those allegations. Cuomo, as governor, requested the investigation last winter and resigned soon after the August 3rd report by outside attorneys hired by the Attorney General's office. The transcripts include Cuomo saying, and I quote, "I have no recollection of touching a woman on her butt. May it have happened accidentally? Incidentally? Yes. But I don't have any recollection of purposely touching a woman on the butt," end quote. The Attorney General's office included an audio recording of Cuomo singing "Do You Love Me" by the Contours to one of the women accusing him of sexual harassment. On the transcript, Cuomo says, and I quote, "I don't even know that song," end quote, when denying he had ever sung it to the woman. Cuomo's attorney, Rita Galvin, has been calling for the public release of the transcripts for weeks. And you can read more about this story in the Times Union.
And Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics that seven environmental groups are asking New York lawmakers to make it easier to buy an electrical vehicle in the state. 2014, New York lawmakers blocked electric vehicle makers from operating independent car dealerships in the state. Only Tesla was grandfathered in and allowed to operate five direct sales dealerships. Now the New York League of Conservation Voters, Environmental Advocates New York, Environmental Entrepreneurs, the Alliance for Clean Energy New York, Citizens Campaign for the Environment, the Sierra Club, and the Natural Resources Defense Council want that to change. Quote, there is a critical need to lower greenhouse gas emissions, and we can take immediate action through the rapid adoption of zero emissions vehicles across New York State, unquote, said Julie Teague, the president of the New York League of Conservation Voters. Quote, if New York wants to continue being leaders in the fight against climate change, we need to increase the number of zero emissions vehicles on the road dramatically, unquote. State Assembly plan a hearing on transportation issues and electric vehicles next season and may discuss direct sales of electrical vehicles then. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Thursday, Veterans Day, it will be partly sunny with a temperature high near 53 degrees. There will be showers between 10 p.m. and 4 a.m. on Thursday night, and then rain after 4 a.m. The temperature low will be around 44 degrees. And on Friday, rain before 1 p.m., then showers are likely mainly between 1 p.m. and 4 p.m. The temperature high will be near 62 degrees. And Friday night, partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 38 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
You have tuned into all sorts of creative community voices on the radio Thursday, November 11th at 90.7 FM, including at 10 a.m. Cheryl Kay hosts Situation Fluxus. Today she speaks with art consultant Dorothan Kirk, major force at Newark's WBGO Jazz FM, and also John Schreiber, the president and CEO of the New Jersey Performing Arts Center in Newark. Plus, you'll hear music selections and an interview with multi-instrumentalist and singer-songwriter Leo Sidran. That's on the Situation Fluxus show at 10 a.m. At 11 a.m., it's time to tune in some Gamelan music on the Transformational Listening Show. Then at noon, after the local news, it's time for Ear Candy from Brad Munkle from Greenville. At 2 p.m., What's the Frequency? Kenneth is the show that plays brand new music and sets it to the sounds of the week in news. This week, the theme is What If They Gave Subpoenas and Nobody Came? Then Big Bird tweets back at 3 p.m. on the Turn on the News show. At 9 p.m., we're live from Toronto with Andrew O'Connor and the Disco 3000 show. And then at 10 p.m., we're live with the Magic Stranger somewhere in Columbia County on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
Welcome to the Jazz Disturbance. A show featuring jazz and other improvisational music from local, regional, worldwide, and world-class artists, connecting listeners with the people and places presenting in the area. The Jazz Disturbance airs on the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 5th Sunday of each month from our Hudson studio from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. The Jazz Disturbance, 90.7 degrees, hot.
Hey
Hello and welcome to the better weather for this Veterans Day, Thursday, November 11th. Early this morning, we see 29 degrees in East Delhi and 34 in Twilight Park. As the day moves on, cloud cover will increase along with the temperature. A high of 57 is expected at 2 p.m. Temperatures overnight don't change too much. A low of 46 is expected at 9 p.m. Afterward, it will steadily get warmer as rain enters the area. Friday, the rain continues all day with a chance of thunder in the afternoon. A high of 63 is expected at 3 p.m. Friday night, the rain stops not long after dark, and temperatures fall to 37 degrees. Saturday will have a rainy afternoon and a high of 57. Sunday will be dry, partly cloudy, and have a high of 50. Closest expected snowfall today will be 700 miles away at the northern edge of Lake Superior. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 2:32 a.m., high tide at 8:24 a.m., low tide again at 2:48 p.m., and high tide again at 8:42 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 51 degrees. Sunset today will be at 4:26 p.m., and sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:37 a.m. Looking way up, we see a southern coronal hole is releasing a plasma stream that is expected to reach Earth next week. Solar wind speed is currently 394 kilometers per second at 9.7 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently poor for daytime and fair for nighttime. The 24-hour predicted KP index is too quiet. The current sunspot number is 37. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Paul and Liz of Kinderhook, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
except you and you and me, selling off Fiesta plates, 8 loaves of bread and gain no weight from pecan waffles on the roof, the summer of my wasted. Summertime in 83, the last time I took LSD, but listening to Patsy Cline and Skeeter Davis really blew my mind. Played the boombox in the courtyard, never used a credit card, still took a trip by Greyhound bus, the summer I believed in. Plaster cows down city streets, wore thrift store skirts with little pleats, smoked pot and sat around all day, bought a guitar but didn't try to play.
Thursday, November 11th, Catskill's Amy Rigby performs at the Colony Cafe with Catskill artist Jen Dubois opening, and Amy Rigby will be playing with Reckless Eric, too. That's Thursday, November 11th at the Colony Cafe in Woodstock, and you can find more about community events on the WGXC community calendar at wgxc.org. Here is a track from Amy Rigby's 2018 release, The Old Guys. This song is called Robert Altman, from Catskill singer-songwriter Amy Rigby.
Was it worth the hurt and hassles and the bridges burned and cash that you blew through? Build a city of sandcastles and the time it takes to swim from Malibu. And your family all stood up to take a bow. Are you floating in the atmosphere right now? Robert Altman. In a screening room on Sunset, are we done yet? Is it time to fill the ring? Still the stranger's heart you've treasured, couldn't measure your success by reckoning. I hear voices overlapping everywhere. Just like betting on the horses, the true course is not the way to win applause. When the zipper on your windbreaker gets stuck, is persistence just the opposite of luck?
From the Daily Yonder and Public News Service, this is the news from rural America. There's a silver lining in the supply chain slowdown this holiday season. Many small-town main streets are stocked with locally made scarves, artwork, honey, and other gifts. Jessica Campos with the Center for Rural Affairs says it's changed folks' shopping habits.
To think more locally in terms of supporting their neighbors, their local food system, and local economies.
And almost two-thirds of local small businesses also have a functioning website to place orders and shop safely online. The number of newly completed COVID vaccinations in rural counties declined for the third consecutive week, according to Tim Merrima, editor of the Daily Yonder. He says continued vaccine hesitancy is higher in non-urban areas.
The gap between metro and rural vaccination rates has been pretty steady at about 12 percentage points, and that's significant.
No one really knows why suicide rates are higher in some sparsely populated western states like Montana.
Unfortunately, we've had the distinction of being in the top five for all suicides of all ages, basically throughout the last 30 years.
Kelly Edwards runs YAM, the Youth Aware of Mental Health program housed at the Center for Research on Rural Education. They enlist trusted local extension agents to help struggling teenagers in areas where therapists and psychiatrists are hundreds of miles away.
Let's say you live in eastern Montana, you might be driving 6 hours for mental health care if you were in a crisis.
Extension agents start by meeting with ninth graders to help them learn more about their own emotions and understand there's a difference between normal feelings of sadness or nervousness and depression.
In a small northwest Iowa town, the storm like times weaves the fabric of the community in large ways and small.
A new documentary telling the Pulitzer Prize-winning local newspaper story of survival debuts this month on PBS's Independent Lens series. Art Cullen publishes the Storm Lake Times, a sometimes controversial news outlet staffed entirely by family members.
Now people want to get their news for free.
And without strong local journalism, the fabric of the place becomes frayed.
And that's not how you sustain a democracy.
Since 2004, more than 500 rural newspapers have shut down or been absorbed. Cullen's son, Tom, says even after winning journalism's most prestigious prize, they had to launch a GoFundMe campaign to survive the pandemic, and worries more rural counties will become news deserts.
The prospect of the newspaper not being around terrifies me.
The paper is known for its scrappy coverage of immigration, climate change, and big agriculture.
So, let's get that story.
For the Yonder Report and Public News Service, I'm Roz Brown. For more rural stories, visit dailyyonder.com.
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We are in Ledig House, which is the community house for the residency programs. It's an old, beautiful farmhouse. It's fall out. The leaves have pretty much gone. And it's a gorgeous day here at Art O'Mai. I'm Ruth Adams, co-executive director of Art O'Mai.
I'm Gavin Berger, co-executive of Art O'Mai.
And this is the new dog, the new O'Mai dog. Her name is Eileen, and she's going to be providing us with a little bit of breathing.
Your staff was recently increased, and Gavin Berger, you are one of the new hires. What should listeners know about you?
I have a love and passion of Columbia County and Art O'Mai. I've been a resident for 19 years in the Columbia County area, and I've had a long career in arts and culture, and this is a very special place to me.
You are working on progressing Art O'Mai by focusing on institutional advancement and financial stability. What does that mean?
So Art O'Mai has been around now. We'll be celebrating our 30th anniversary. The institution grew very organically, and we're now a big adult, so now we're just bringing in and putting in more structural type of stuff so we can grow even more. So it's an exciting time for Art O'Mai.
Are there actual plans there, or is this just the beginning phase of this development?
Yeah, no, there's lots of big plans. We are looking into our expansion in Chatham as the next generation of O'Mai, as well as just keeping what we do best here on the Ghent campus.
Is there anything you can tell us about the expansion to Chatham?
We can say that it's about to be voted on by the town of Chatham in a few days, I think. It's a vision that the founders had for a long time about providing special pavilions for artists' work, individual pavilions dedicated to artists' work. And as always, a beautiful space in nature for the public to walk and enjoy.
Art O'Mai is on 120 acres of nature, and it seems to be a very big part of what Art O'Mai is. Can you talk a little bit more about the importance of having access to nature for artist inspiration and just for community?
Yeah, I mean, it all started with the residency program 30 years ago for the visual artists, and it was really the barn and a 14-acre parcel. There's a long tradition of nature being a place for artists to escape to in the United States and, you know, everywhere else, but certainly in this part of the country in the Northeast. You know, a retreat for an artist is all about, I think, sort of reducing stimuli, getting yourself out of your daily life, and being with other artists and really thinking through ideas that you can get access to because you've got sort of a more open, quiet space around you. And that has been true for the sculpture park as well. Walking around seeing sculpture in a way that's unscripted, not paved paths, it's not a white cube, that's a really different experience to see art in. And in the architecture park, since that's a more recent program, we really wanted that to be a place for architects to explore that intersection between art, nature, and architecture.
Gavin, how does Art O'Mai compared to the many other organizations that you've worked for? You have a pretty extensive list of arts organizations that you've worked for. So how does this compare?
It's very different and similar. It's personally very special to me because our residency program, for instance, cover the five disciplines I've always loved in my life, which is dance, visual arts, music, architecture, and writers. So personally, it means a lot more because most of the institutions I've worked for are very either specifically performing arts or visual arts. The only similar thing that I've been always involved with for years is the Banff Center in Canada, which is another artist residency that does cross disciplines. But it's a much different kind of institution. This is a very special, unique intimate experience for artists. And then we have the amazing sculpture and architectural park, which just adds to the value of the whole experience for individuals to come and experience art in the way they would like to.
So when you're looking at funding and support, how do you balance the national or perhaps global with the local?
So Art OMI is definitely an international organization. 75% of our residents are international and are from all over the world. And the artists that we represent in the Sculpture and Architectural Park are from all over the world, which actually helps us from a fundraising point of view. We also are in a fortunate situation where our founder has never given up on the organization and only keeps expanding it. So one of the nice things that we can actually promote to people is that our operations, so like Ruth and my salary, is covered by our founder, thank you. And so when people give money to the institution, they're giving it directly to programmatic causes.
Our institutions tend to attract a certain demographic. So how do you plan to develop this organization to attract a wider audience?
Well, it's funny you say that, Sina, because what we learned during the pandemic, of course, we were just like any park, just grateful for all the support of all the visitors, but lots and lots of visitors. That we'd never had that many people. And the number has come down, but has, of course, we did see a gain in visitors numbers. So what we started to do was register them. And we've always wanted to do this, to ask people to register on the busy times, especially, so that we could learn more about them. And also so we could welcome them better, make sure they have a parking space, get and really start to follow with, you know, let them follow us, follow them, explore a relationship with our visitors. So in the meantime, what we found out is that 90% of them were here for the first time. So seems like people are coming. They're hearing about us. They're coming. And what we're thinking about now is how do we make sure they come back? How do we make sure that there's something here for them that attracts them to tell people in their neighborhood or speak to their schools about bringing kids here so that we can really start to make people who maybe come for the nature, come back for the art.
What has the local reaction been to that?
You know, during the pandemic, there was only a little bit of concern from neighbors about the number of cars here. And at the worst part of the pandemic, when, of course, we knew nothing about the virus, we did close down basically to about 25 parking spots. And we sent out the news on our social media and said, just know that if you're coming, you probably can't park. So don't drive from a long way. And it worked. People stayed away. And when we felt it was safer, we opened back up. And our visitor center was closed for the whole time. So we didn't have staff here. You know, what we learned, like anybody during the pandemic, is how to be, right? How to safely bring people into a building, how to keep the staff safe, the visitors safe, how to have a show in the gallery that's safe. So it's been a learning curve. Like, it has for everybody, but it's working.
So you mentioned a wide range of people coming here for the first time. Are you making efforts to reach the people who don't feel like Art OMI is a space for them?
That's something that we're talking about a lot right now. We have always partnered with a lot of organizations in the area. So COARC, working with adults with disabilities, Perfect 10, which is a wonderful organization in Hudson that works with teen girls, Kite's Nest, Operation Unite. We've always worked with these kinds of partners, and we'll continue to do that. The schools, we have great partnerships with the schools. We do a program in the schools for teachers that is teaching them to integrate the arts when they're non-arts teachers, right? So math teachers, history teachers, are learning to integrate the arts, which the professional development, it's really a professional development program with an expert from MCLA in the Berkshires. And we did it virtually last year and reached all six school districts, something like 50 something teachers. And the feedback was incredible. They're so grateful for the professional development. It makes them be able to reach students, more students that maybe they haven't been able to reach. They can reach in a new way and enrich their teaching. It's been an incredible experience. So we feel that we're doing sort of that groundwork. We're always looking to do more and to make sure that people feel that this is a space where they're welcome. You know, we're careful. We don't, instead of saying, you know, the mysterious phrase suggested donation, we make sure that we explain that you can come here for free. You can come here and not pay anything. And we want to make sure that's true for people. Transportation, we know, is an issue for a lot of people. That's really a tough one. We do solve that in our day camp. We have scholarship for kids. And one of the major components is that we have a van that picks them up and brings them home every day. So that makes it accessible to them.
Where would you like to see Art Omai in 10 years?
I'd like to see it where it is now. Just really successful in reaching people internationally, locally. It's just that it's a sustainable institution, and that the Pavilions has opened to success. Just that it's a magic place where both individuals can come here and enjoy art. And then we also support artists of all disciplines, from emerging to well-known famous ones. So 10 years from now, hopefully we'll be celebrating our 40th anniversary.
I agree. I think that, you know, we've reached a place where we are doing what we do really well. And we're still a nimble organization. We're good at sort of adapting, trying new things. And I hope that that spirit stays alive. I don't think Art Omai ever wants to be a stuffy, predictable place, right? It's really a place that's always fun. We know how to have fun here. And we're really about building community and welcoming community, you know, in every way, locally, internationally. I mean, we have artists coming from all over the world who we want to stay in touch with, who we want to make sure that they feel they can come back to the area and give back in some way, because they want to. They ask us, how can I come and stay and do a project in town? Or, you know, what can I do to thank you? So, you know, I think that kind of community building can just grow and get richer. And that's what I really see for the future.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
What's the situation, Captain?
This is Cheryl Kay, host of Situation Fluxus on WGXC, 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. The show is a weekly one-hour program focused on jazz and improvised music, news, radio, conversations, and more that airs on Thursdays at 10 a.m. and Fridays at 4 a.m. To contact us about Situation Fluxus, thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com or info@wgxc.org. Keep tuned in to 90.7 FM, wavefarm.org/listen, tune in, and on the Wavefarm radio app on your smartphone. Our website is wgxc.org.
Maybe.
Behind me, open chest in the heart.
from 1997. This is Isotope 217 with the song Le Jetty from the Unstable Molecule album.
Yeah.